on now.
And the minutes are at the exact same time. So can we do that?
Sure.
Is there a motion to approve or otherwise the minutes for the last meeting?
Motion to approve.
Second.
The minutes are approved.
Hi, Rob.
There he is.
Move to adjourn.
Go back out, come back in, give me 5 minutes.
There's no one from the public here.
We're on item number 3, and there's been a comment about adding an agenda item.
Okay. What would that be?
So I would like to add an agenda item for discussion. So, as I was saying earlier, so they got a preview. So I feel like we had, when the building moratorium was lifted, we spent an awful lot of time, you know, updating the building standards. I feel like we did a really, really good job at, like, balancing, allowing people to do what they want, need, and desire to do with their property, but also trying to balance that with some development, good stuff happening for the city, but also not make it turn into this small plateau. So my question is, because we have such a small amount of possible property that can be developed, so if someone comes and puts in a permit that has deviations from the standards that we've so succinctly put on paper and scoured over for hours and hours and hours, is it appropriate that we say from this point forward that we get better visibility of that when we have someone put in something that's a deviation from what's on the paper?
So you're asking about if they're asking for a variance, that come to the Planning Commission for review, or just receive notice, or is that?
Well, I think the desire would be. The desire would be is that it comes to Planning Commission for review, but I don't know if that's completely out of the question or not.
Right now, it's not a part of the process. I think the deviation process you're talking about is the administrative adjustments to standards that the Twin Falls subdivision had applied for, and that is an administrative.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think of that's one, and it happened like that.
Yeah.
And so I worry about there's still other ones out there. So what if the next guy comes and says, okay, so I see that this happened, so now I'm going to try over here to, do something different that allows me to have 10 instead of 6 or whatever.
Sounds a good point.
Well, I guess I'm wondering, without seeing this application in the minutia, if we've structured language already by crunching over for hours, I agree with the point. If that language still describes what they want, haven't we already approved it?
There are criteria that an administrative adjustments to standards application has to meet for granting approval. And there's limitations on how much they can ask for deviating from the ADS process is just for bulk and dimensional standards, so setbacks and height limits. And it has a number of criteria. So it has to not impact adjacent property owners. It has to be limited to no more than a 25% reduction to what was otherwise required. A number of other things that they have to show that they're meeting before the adjustments can be approved. And then there's also the public comment period where we send out our draft review of it. The public has their opportunity to say we disagree, and we can consider that comment before actually issuing a final approval.
And in that case, adjacent property owners receive
right.
that, right? And
right.
So it's not just publication in the paper. It's if you're an adjacent property, you receive notice.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. Another example that was on our agenda tonight here a little later, and so maybe you could kind of comment on how that sort of a thing would apply, right? We've got this 1 acre rule and we're being asked to reduce it to 3/4. Whether it's acre or 3/4, and then there's the height limitation and that. So what would be a similar example of that? There's an application mm-hmm. that would not comply with that. The staff would have some leeway.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Versus what
make it apply
meeting asked to change it. So what would that look like?
They could also apply for an ATS application in that case. And it would have to go through that same process. Couldn't be more than 25% increase over what the code allows, notifying adjacent property owners. Then there's other criteria that I don't remember off the top of my head, but each one of those criteria has to be met. And these deviation processes, I feel, are important because there's always a lot of circumstances that something is going to be different than what strict application of the code would anticipate.
And I get that, but what I struggle with is that if we were talking about we had thousands of acres for development, I would understand that there's probably the probability of kind of the oddities coming up is higher because there's more space, but we have such a small amount. And so when we're talking about this, it's such a small amount that impacts, even though you say it's just the people, you know, who directly impact, but what about the next neighborhood or the next one that just happens to be next to it? And so, like, I'm just trying to be sensitive to the balance of we created our building standards to comply to what we think this city wanted, and it's not the Issaquah Plateau thing. It's what we have here already, but we have standards in here that we still have the possibility that we're going to have, you know, houses. I mean, that's just what we did. And so I just struggle with the extreme of not of making a bunch of exceptions, and then we end up with these pockets of this oddity that doesn't fit with what we were trying to put in place.
There's also a provision in there that says shall not apply in widespread fashion for an ATS application, and that's what we ultimately use to deny
the... And those are the things, it's like... in a widespread fashion. So what's widespread? Is that more than 3, or is that more than 12, mm-hmm. or is that more than 100?
Yeah.
So, like, and we talk about this all the time, the should, would, coulds, that wording. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's like, so what is widespread? You know, so it's defined by whoever just happens to be reading it. And so mm-hmm. I could say that widespread to me in this particular case is more than 2 or 3. So,
Mike, the variance process that we're talking about, is that, where's that language defined? I'm trying to picture right now the code that we wrote, and I don't think the variance criteria is also documented within that, right? It's a separate.
So there's two processes. There's a variance, which is a formal process that goes before a hearing examiner, and that's when you really want to get away, you know, long ways away from what the standards call for. And that's when it's based on hardship or unique circumstance. You can't just do it because you want a bigger house on the lot. You have to show that you can't build a house on your lot because of the application of setbacks, or you can't, whatever it is, it's out of the ordinary completely.
Yeah.
And could result in a takings unless a variance was granted. This other process is a much milder process, and it's just administrative. It doesn't go to the hearing examiner. That's what's called the application for administrative adjustments to standards. And that's where it's limited to 25%, so we're not talking a lot, and it's limited applicability. So the idea is it's, again, providing flexibility. Because you wouldn't believe how many people come into our office and say, "Oh, that you mean that code's going to require that," mm-hmm. and so it's just.
So I guess Piper. I mean, I hear you, and I know that at times when I'm looking at different things that are going on around town or things that we're considering, I sometimes think, like, "Wait a minute, why aren't we seeing or involved in more of that?" And so, but finding the right balance of what really should, and I think where you started your first comment, Mike, was that currently we don't have provision for that. But I recall a similar conversation a couple of years ago with Jenna, where she said, "Well, we could. It would be writing, you know, our code differently to say, you know, plats need to come before the Planning Commission, you know, which I think was what we were talking about." I was feeling like, wow, we really never hear about plats after we're done. And I didn't pursue that for the what I consider very good reason of, oh, that's right, that's really has its own administrative process, you know, already in place, and it kind of makes sense. And I think that together with that there is a balance, and I know you guys like when we're talking about the shoulds versus shalls, you know, you see me often on the should side, mm-hmm. and leaving that flexibility, because it is one of those, we can't know it all, we can't hit it all right, and so needing to leave you know, some degree of flexibility with the staff so we're not tying their hands and or ending up inadvertently, mm-hmm. you know, hurting the public or hurting ourselves through what we've,
right.
you know, comes before us. With that said, Bruce or Jim, I don't know, I've got a suggestion.
Keep going.
Maybe we're kind of at the point, you know, because we're kind of struggling with, you know, good defined examples. Maybe staff could just kind of brief us on the various rules of that administrative process.
Yeah.
And issues, well, you know, and come with some examples. Maybe it's a quick little PowerPoint or something to help us get to that point, and then we kind of see what the commission as a whole feels like, if there's something that we want tightened up. Or,
well, I feel like to Piper's point, we spent a whole bunch of time in this, and it wasn't like we started with a blank slate. We started off with, you know, a myriad of different cities' documents and county documents and blended it to fit our needs.
Yeah.
And it's almost, and not to be counter to your point, it's almost like allowing that lack of clarity, if there is any, that's what's going to dictate the next evolution of the permits that are issued across the city. So it's almost like we need to have some real life things go through that maybe they're not exactly perfect. Because we're sitting here, it hadn't been built yet. We don't know what perfect looks like.
I think what you're suggesting is that a variety of these administrative adjustments are allowed and built, and then as you look back at that as a whole, it helps guide you towards what does need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, place, it often identifies
the place we've been, which is stuck in the mud. Mm-hmm. Now is not the time to layer in another timeline or process, or again, with no disrespect to your point, it's kind of like the developers and builders and individual citizens on their land have been watching, waiting, let's go, let's go, let's go. And we've had tons of time, and Denick did a great job of crafting what they have to operate by. If we were to suggest any time it's going to deviate from that, then we've got to come back through our process, which, by the way, might only be once a month, and not
right.
on the docket list, and da 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 da. Now we're all the way down. This person who thought they could start in 2015 is now in 2016.
Oftentimes, an administrative adjustments to standards application helps us to identify where a code amendment really does need to take place. So, as an example, there's chimneys were not allowed in the side setbacks. But it was seemed reasonable to allow that because it's just this small little. And so Polygon applied for an ads for some chimneys and side setbacks, and we granted it and allowed that. But we still have the code problem at hand that we can't allow this thing. Mm-hmm. And so at some point when we come back to reopen Title 18, we have that little flag now that let's think about that and amend that at some point. So it does help to refine the process back,
yeah.
but we still need that flexibility for each of these
right.
chimney issues that come up.
Right. And I appreciate that. That's a really good example of how, yeah, you don't want to hinder something that really is not that big a deal. But I think, like, in the example that I'm currently living, hearing, breathing about, I think that's the complete other extreme. Of, you know, the exception being something that's much more impactful than a chimney on the side of a house.
Has that process run its course now?
It was denied. We denied the ATS based on the applicability and limited circumstance. They wanted to apply it to all 12 lots, and so that didn't meet that test, and so we therefore denied it.
So in that sense, it worked.
Right. But there's still a hearing, though.
There's a hearing for the plat, but not on the ATS. The ATS is done.
Right.
They can't continue with that.
So what would the hearing...
The hearing is for the subdivision itself. So that they'll still move forward with...
complying with the,
right.
The way we wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which they can't do anything with because there's no other... there's not another way for them to...
Well, that's where it comes back to their revised layout.
Okay. All right. So the point being is that, you know, you guys went through an awful lot of pain for it where... It seems inefficient and ineffective to have to keep doing that time and time again, that people trying to, you know, put the round peg in the square hole. And so how do we balance, you know, even accepting a permit that is going to deviate from what is in the code?
So you're saying you don't want to allow any kind of deviations?
What's that?
You're saying you don't want to allow deviations?
No, but I think that it's just that, like...
It's going to create more process if we get involved. I mean, you're just saying, okay, well, a lot more process
like
if we get involved.
The example that he's talking about is the, you know, the chimney on the end of the house. Yeah, I mean, the impact of that is like just negligible. I mean, it's like not even worth.
What was the deviation on the other one?
The other one was to reduce the rear setback by 6 feet.
People.
Okay.
If the impact is on the people that are buying in that track.
But it's not.
But the real problem
is
likely to the neighborhood is the size of the lot. So I'm guessing.
The size of the lot already met the standards.
Right. But
yeah,
I'm guessing that's the real problem.
Well, I'm saying,
on yours,
so
yes.
On the one that
right.
Now has been
so, okay. So again, I think to kind of conclude this, because we are, so, you know, we have the standards, as we've all discussed, and we have a variance process. And or administrative adjustments process. Both of those pieces are in place, and so what I think I'm hearing, as you just clarified, you're not saying, no, I don't want there to be any variance process or administrative process. You're just wondering about where's the line, where's the balance, right?
Right?
So again, it seems like about the best we could do, at least currently in the education problem of things, is just getting better understanding of what, you know, what are the types of things, where does, how does that play in, and,
you know. Well, let me suggest.
So,
can I suggest if you want to take a look at it further, it's under Title 18 zoning under our city code. And I don't remember the specific chapter, but if you look under Title 18, you'll see administrative adjustments to standards. And it's a pretty short chapter, so you can look through it and see what those standards are.
Okay.
And that might give you an idea if there's something that you want to suggest.
So, okay.
Yeah. And I would say, just if my neighbors were calling me, which we're supposed to be out there listening to our neighbors, right? That's kind of why we're here.
That's why I'm here.
I would encourage them to make their comments known.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Through the public channel.
Yes.
To the mayor's office, to the city council.
Yes.
To us directly. Because those are the sorts of things that
they have done.
Maybe we missed
some. Poor Mike. They did that.
over 40 comment letters.
Right? If we missed something.
And you're probably getting some more in the next couple weeks.
Which is good. That's what it's about.
That's what it's for.
It's the public process.
And I think the key, and I think then I'm good with this, is that, you know, it's exactly that. I came here because I wanted to make sure that our little voice down there in the east end of North Bend was heard, because that was the whole point of annexing us, is that we could come here and not have to go see the king, as he so politely told us. The advantage is you can come to us and your voice gets heard and you don't have to see the king. So, yes. And I hear it and I feel like I need to be here, and what I do every day is the voice of the citizens that I hear, but also a balancing of what I hear you guys hear. So I just want to make sure that we're all doing the right thing.
I have to ask a chimney question. That sounds like something that would have been first put in the code when brick masons were building chimneys.
Exactly.
So that somebody else's chimney didn't fall.
It's not a specific disallowance of chimneys. It's that no structure can be within the setback. So we want to amend that.
Setback, and you're saying, oh, does that apply to this little
chimney.
Bump out of
the chimney?
And a direct read says nothing in that setback.
Which, and the fire department was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was going to say that I could actually have seen it the other way. But, oh, wait a minute, that's applying across all of these properties, and boy, it is impeding. Now I've got only a 4 foot
clearance. No, they still have to meet the minimum fire clearance. But
except the chimneys we're talking about are probably on the first story.
Yeah, it's literally just a little
false chimney.
And isn't outside of the drip line, right? Probably anyway, right?
Yeah.
So that's your real instruction. Anyway, okay.
All right,
so I don't want to
check that box. I'm sorry that I took 22 minutes.
Well done.
Thank you.
Look what you've done.
7:05 started.
Do I need to buy all of your wife's flowers now?
I lost it before I even got in the door.
I'll tell you, offer.
Agenda item number 4, comp plan capital facilities element amendment for 2013, docket number 11.
Yeah, so you guys had requested more info on what the process is for the city considering it. I sent out the materials. If you had a chance to look at that.
Awesome, by the way.
So the process still stands. It still has to go before the city council every year. And so they have to review it and accept it or reject it. But this, again, all we're trying to do is take one step out of it and that we don't have to amend our comp plan element in accepting that every year.
I've raised the concern. I get it. Reading this, I have no more concerns. So.
Well, I also like the termination. If you know, if the city doesn't like what they're saying, they can terminate it at any time. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's not anything binding.
Yeah.
Yep.
So motion
to
approve.
Hold on.
You stop it.
We're gonna bring this back for a hearing.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, we got so one more meeting on this.
Sure. Move this agenda.
Yeah.
So.
You're
right.
Dang.
We're gonna make time up.
We'll make it a really.
That advertisement was for.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep, you're right. You got a hearing to deal with. So, any further comment or action on this? Great.
Nope.
Agenda item number 5, amendment to North Bend Municipal Code 1810.050, section 1.1 concerning size and height of accessory residential uses for 2013, docket number 3. Also not for action tonight.
Yeah. And I thought that proponent of the docket would have come, but he didn't come tonight. He sent an invitation. So I don't remember how many of you guys were on Planning Commission at the time that we considered this in 2010. You were, everybody except for Bruce. Okay. So originally we didn't have a 1 acre threshold. It was just all accessory structures had to be limited to 50% of the size of the primary structure, which created a lot of problems. So then we said, okay, if you're over an acre, then you got room to spread your stuff out and you're not going to be impacting the visual character of the neighborhood. So even since 1 acre was put into place, we've received quite a number, probably 6 or 7 building permit applications for structures that still couldn't be approved because they were under an acre. And almost all of those were right around 3/4 to 1 acre. And
the variance doesn't apply in this case. Can you do an administrative variance?
I think you could do that administrative adjustments to standards, but what the applications were for would have exceeded over 25% of the allowed. So the primary limitation is that 50% of the size of the primary structure can be very limiting, especially if you have a small structure, which is the case that Mr. Lobb has. His house is 900 some square feet. So the max he could do is 500 square feet, which isn't much room. So he applied for this process, and we put together some amendments. First of all,
can I ask a question before you go to that? What would be another limiter? So the first limiter is the size of their first structure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, but I might have a 3,000 square foot home on this property.
Yeah.
5,000 square foot home on the property. what else would be a limiter?
So the height is an existing limiter. So it's either the, it's either 25 feet now or the height of the principal structure.
I thought that was the original. Is there another one on the docket that's for height? Because I thought that was, I thought that's what this one was when I first saw it on the, is there another
That's
one
not
the
what
docket?
They submitted.
Oh, okay.
But we added that as staff because we've run into that one so many times that it's, we feel it's unfair.
Okay.
So if you've got a 1950s ranch house that's only 16 feet tall, that means you can't have anything else on your property beyond 16 feet tall.
I just recollect that being why we put it on the docket, but maybe I...
We probably brought it up.
So yeah. We've talked. Okay. I know we've talked about it a bunch of times, yeah.
This is making two modifications, right? You're going to extend, change it to a permanent 25-foot standard height, right?
Yeah, that's one of the amendments that we're suggesting.
What made you come up with the 25 feet
instead of 35?
25 feet is the standard for accessory uses already. And so that's just applying it uniform. So even if you have a small lot in town here, if you're under that 3/4 acre, it's 25 feet regardless of the height of your existing home.
Mm.
And it's just a more uniform standard, easier to apply, more fair.
Okay.
And that's 25 feet from... soil?
To the peak of the roof.
From the soil?
From the ground to the peak of the roof. Yeah.
Okay.
It's probably mean height or some other goofy thing too, right?
Yeah, there's another height that we apply with our 35-foot height limit throughout the city, which is...
on a sloped lot.
Right. On a pitched roof, it's the midpoint.
Mm.
But that's not how it reads in this one.
So would there be... a timer example where you could say, well, it's not logical to restrict them to the 25-foot height?
That's, again, where it's applying. This provision with the 25 feet is when you're under 3/4 acre. And so that's where you don't necessarily want to have a really, really tall structure in a dense
neighborhood. Yeah, I get that, but I'm picturing the typical home at 35 feet,
mm-hmm.
right? And saying, so how big of an issue is it between the 25 foot and the 35 foot for the accessory?
There's a zillion ways to skin a cat. So in thinking about this, there's always externalities. If you went to,
I'm not asking for a change. I'm just saying, okay. But I'm trying to think. We're getting if we're moving toward the path of changing what we did 2 years ago,
yeah.
Then we're going to have that in place for a while, and then the next set of applicants are going to come in and say, well, you know what, 3/4 is too big. I think it should be a half.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're going to come in and they're going to say, you know what, I've got a full 2-story home, plus it's raised from, you know, floodplain, and why can't I build, I've got to get above floodplain, so I need to be able to get this accessory unit in, I need to be above 25 feet.
Well, with an accessory structure, it's most typically going to be a pole barn, where it's a frame building that doesn't have a foundation,
mm-hmm.
and those tend to be tall with a not a very steeply pitched roof, and so most of that 25 feet is going to be this big sheer wall,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to...
What's the definition of an accessory?
Definition of it? I don't think I have that with me. It's in our code, but it's basically just another building on the property secondary to the primary structure.
It's larger than a doghouse.
Does it exclude an ADU?
Larger than what?
It includes an ADU.
200 feet?
Okay. So it's not really a pole barn necessarily. It could be a living.
There are other ADU standards, though, that apply to bulking dimension.
That would supersede and give them relief from the living.
You always bring me all these challenges.
Well, Jim
did
such fine work last time. I don't want to screw it up.
I think there's a that whole topic that I remember it. And you look at any street as you bump out a block from the original planned roads. Every street has that same potential on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're 3/4+ lots, and they're sometimes narrow and deep, or sometimes they were 3 lots they've combined, and now you got the nearly an acre.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of acre lots, though,
mm-hmm.
that would fall into this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's you really, it's a tough nut, and maybe this is a point we need to come back to. So we make sure that, you know, we don't end up having, you know, every contractor who wants to rent out a little house and have a shop in the back. That's not what we end up with.
Right. And so what we did in thinking about that size threshold, whether that's in a half an acre, three quarters of an acre, we took a look at a number of the properties around the city that seemed to have this type of scenario. And half acre seemed a little tight, because you jump into another category when you're at half an acre, where you're more in the urban context. But at three quarters of an acre or larger, other than Wood River is the one exception.
You don't have three quarters of an acre.
Yeah.
I expect
you to allow it.
We don't allow it anyways. Well, okay, no, you can't have an accessory building, but there are...
Probably stricter regs than these.
If it's worth mentioning, just kind of a quick anecdotal. Kirkland, I was involved in this when it happened. Kirkland was evolving, Quebec, 20 years ago. On the 85th ramp, which comes into downtown Kirkland, there's a street called 7th, which is basically one block off that main arterial. Mm-hmm. And it was not at the time zoned industrial, light industrial. And right on the cusp of that, little Sally passed away, and her children had this little 1920s bungalow house on three quarters of an acre. The buyer said, I'd like to buy it, and I want to put up a shop in the back. Bought the lot, everything's no problem, because you can do that under the current codes. Well, what he ended up building was a paint storage facility, which really just deliveries would come and go with the trucks and that whole thing. So all the neighbors that lived around there had been there for many, many years. All of a sudden, they are flat out in the middle of where they didn't want to live. So that's to make the point of why this is an issue. It could easily happen.
Well, that brings in another factor, though, that would be it sounds like it's a business.
Totally. So it was the first active business.
We allow home occupations, but there's, again, size limitations on how much of your property you can use for a home occupation.
Yeah. Mm. And the point there is you might not know until the guy's been doing whatever he's doing for years after the building sits there.
Mm-hmm.
So
for the next
advance. Or the renter, who the owner didn't even know. You know. So anyway, I also think about it, because if we allow the density inside those little pockets to remain low, because we haven't incentivized the landowners by the ability to create high density, if we haven't done that, then that's the reason it's becoming an issue, is because there's a rub between what people can do and what they want to do. We allow higher density in the area where we're concerned about people building the secondary building. That's going to kind of go away on its own, because those people will choose to say, gee, I got four lots here, or I can spend 50 grand and put a shop in the back. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll shut up now.
Yeah, I'm different. Having, and I recall spending a great deal of time.
We spent a lot of time on
this. So that's
topic.
Certainly what's giving me pause.
I think it's because it's a pinch topic. That's a symptom of a pinch in the development phase.
But it's one of those, like we were just talking about with the other, where maybe you make a decision, you know, but we didn't really know what the ramifications were. And I would agree, three quarters is still a pretty good sized lot. And you guys are living this now for a while and seeing kind of what's going on. I think the intention generally is normally good.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm going to go set up this business in the backyard.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
I'd like a shop, you know, to have a Mandarin or whatever.
Yeah. I'm speaking on behalf of the neighbors of the one bad apple.
Yeah, and I mean, those things happen.
So there's a couple of other things that I wanted to bring up in here. The other part is, instead of being 50% limitation, we've suggested increasing that to 75% of the principal structure. And that's, again, because if you've got a small structure, it can be very limiting.
Yeah. I like that.
But if you have a large structure, you're getting
you could have two huges.
Go both ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're an adjacent owner or a property owner.
Yeah. And then to deal with the adjacency issue, right now the accessory building can have 5-foot side and 5-foot rear setbacks. And so we're suggesting increasing that to 10 feet, because if you're having a larger structure on these larger properties, it has the potential to create more shading. So setting it back by an additional 5 feet helps to mitigate that.
It's almost starting to feel like a table to me of size and height. And
we thought about breaking it out in, you know, if you're under half an acre, here's the standard, 3/4 an acre, here's the standard, acre, here's the standard. But it just gets so complicated that at some point you have to say, you know, you're not going to meet it if you don't meet this.
Right. So where are the majority of the properties that this potentially impacts?
Primarily in the Maloney Grove area.
So that is...
all of these...
So is that...
Yeah. All of them in here. That's
in here.
Yeah.
So it's not.
There's a few properties up there that are over 3/4, but most of them are half an acre or less.
So it probably doesn't apply. So it's.
So
it could apply up here.
Yeah.
Some of the
and Mike in the thinking there for the city is that these properties are going to remain large lot?
Not necessarily.
Getting aggregated and developed?
We're not thinking about this as being a way to keep densities low. It's just opening it up for people to be able to do what they're interested to do on their property, reducing regulatory limits.
Would you say that again?
The last part.
I heard music for a second.
I was expecting you to get up and go, finally!
I think it's cool. Let them apply, and if we can't fit in the normal process, we should allow another process and dance going. I mean, don't say no unless you absolutely have to. That's kind of where I think of all this stuff. Your neighbors aren't happy with what may be coming, so they say something, and you come back around, and the applicant wants to modify, and they come back around, and that's the dance, right?
Did you guys, I'm sure you played with some lot sizes and how this...
Here, I think I've got some in the file I can show you.
Because it's hard in my head, I'm trying to picture, okay, so what's the next thing we're going to run into here? Okay, I have to be 20 feet from the principal structure, I got to be 10 feet off of here. I still can't build it. So...
yeah, here's two examples. These are up just off of 108, the nurseries right here. Mm-hmm. Neither of these could be built under our current standards, but there's the accessory structure. Those are both larger than what would be allowed under the picture's pretty small, but there's one of them.
It's basically an oversized
garage. And there's the other. And both of those exceed quite a bit the standards.
I know that one. Okay.
So we looked at quite a few of them. I don't have all of them in the file, but let's see.
So I think what I hear you saying is that you feel that staff really did chew on this for quite a while, mm-hmm. and thinks they landed on a pretty good.
Yeah, and like I said, no matter where you come down as the standard, there's going to be cases that don't meet it. But mm-hmm. for what we've received comment on from multiple property owners, the 1 acre threshold seems too large.
And 3/4 is
probably about right. Yeah. Most of the things most of the applications that have come in that we've had to deny have been in that 3/4 acre to 1 acre range.
So
they're just shy of being getting the yes box checked.
Yeah.
And the 3/4 acre mark, is that the thing that's tipping the balance, or is it the ratio of building size that's getting them into problems?
It's been both. We had one of them that, with the building size, they couldn't meet it because it was beyond the size of their home, so they had to reduce it, and they were ticked at that.
And the setback from 5 to 10, is the current's 5?
Yeah.
I have another question, Mike. I'm sorry. So in these examples that we're looking at, these photos, those are detached accessory buildings.
Right.
If they were attached,
then this doesn't apply. That's just
attached.
A structure. Yeah.
Practically attached.
Mm-hmm.
When they take it on a breezeway, connecting breezeway, then that's exempt?
I'd have to ask Russ how that works.
Because I know an example in England where that actually was used to make it an attached part of the structure, and therefore
it probably would be the case.
A piece of kite string on the roof line, they're attached, right?
They're attached.
And those of you that are listening to your report will know to go and research, you know, what happened in England.
This one's
And then there's just a few other cleanup items in there. So we added in that units that don't require a building permit are exempt from this provision, because we don't want to get into trying to count somebody's thing that they argue whether it's a building or not.
And then, such as a prefab.
Yeah, thing you buy at Home Depot and put in the backyard for the kids or whatever.
Out of curiosity, do we know the county's standard? I mean, considering that they, but I guess a lot of them.
I don't know. I would imagine they have very unlimited standards with regard to size of, because there's so many horses, you know, horse barns and this, that, and the next.
Is there any thought on the 25 feet, I guess, if your primary structure is greater than 25, to allow higher than 25, because it's not going to be proportionate?
You're not limited to 25 feet if you're over 3/4 acre. Then you'd just be limited to the overall city height limit of 35 feet.
Oh, okay.
So
just smaller. Okay.
So in D, 1.51D, so for detached accessories on lots 3/4 acre or larger, they can be bigger,
right,
and higher than the primary building, right?
Yeah.
If it's 25 feet behind the front wall of the principal residence, and then you're adding and a minimum 10 feet from side or rear lots.
Right.
Okay, so I'm thinking of an example in Wood River. So there are a couple homes in the neighborhood that have an accessory building that's actually a whole separate garage, and they're way, like, the lot is this big. The house is way up here, and it's back here, and it's a garage. And if it's 20, you don't want it 20 feet. That means it has to be 20 feet off of the back.
Not 25.
No, closer than that is what you're saying, right? You're saying,
yeah,
20 feet.
And a minimum of 10 feet 10 from feet. Side or rear lot lines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it means it has to be 10 feet in.
Mm-hmm.
Minimum.
Yeah. So why would you do that? I get doing it on.
We'll leave that.
So this is just a hypothetical.
Sorry.
So
I need pictures.
In most cases, these are large lots, so it's not going to be an issue. But even if you have a large lot, imagine here's your house. You know, your Mr. and Mrs. Jones live here. Here's their lot line. And Mr. and Mrs. Smith want to build their accessory building right on the property line, 5 feet. Here's their big accessory barn. That's the scenario we're trying to avoid. So what we're doing is we're saying you're going to have to be at least 10 feet away, which gives a little bit more reasonableness.
But what about on the...
On the backside, or...?
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, wait, just on this example here.
It'd be
so
the
first thing you're saying is that your house on the other lot is ranch, right? Right, so it's probably, what?
15 feet
15
or so.
To 16 feet high. The accessory would be up to 25 feet high, so another 10 feet above it. So quite dramatic, but still, it'd be above it, right? Okay.
Can I draw my picture?
Yep.
Make it nice.
What's that?
Use some color.
There's only one color. I'm sorry. I did look, though. I was looking. So primary residence.
Mm-hmm.
Accessory building is back here. Whenever it's the big garage. So this has to be 10.
Right.
10. Wow.
And 20 between, a minimum of 20 between the primary.
Not between.
No, from
but
here
20,
to here, it's 20
right.
from the front to the back of this, right?
From the front wall.
From the front wall of the house.
Oh, from the front wall. Oh,
front wall of the house back.
So it could be sitting right against the back of the house.
Yep.
So what's the benefit of the 10 versus the normal 5 in this situation?
It's just
for ones that are...
For adjacent property owners, so that they don't get overshaded or over-dominated right on the property.
Because you're assuming...
So you're assuming there's nothing adjacent currently.
Exactly.
But in the future, there could be.
There's a road. That seems really silly, 10 feet. If there's a road there. That's the point I'm trying to make.
You're talking about like an alley or...
A road. That's my lot. That's my house. There's going to be 20-some houses back here. There's going to be a road. So if I wanted to put an accessory building there, I have to have it 10 feet in. That seems a little... That it. I guess,
this is
I get if it's here.
Road.
There's a road.
What's that?
Adjacent to a public road instead of adjacent to a private
to
property.
A property. If it's adjacent to a public road, that... Does it make sense? This makes complete total sense.
Yeah, different setback.
But likely, if you're going to put a driveway in, which is going
to... It's a rear setback,
not
so right now it's just
5 feet.
Well, you probably set
doesn't describe two roads or two...
I think you should subdivide and sell
for using 10-foot as a flat standard.
Right now, that's how it reads. It could be changed, minimum of 10 feet from side or rear lot lines.
So you're thinking we need...
But you don't want the 10 feet.
Well, I mean... The 10 feet I get when it's abutting a piece of property, but if it's abutting a road...
Okay, how about this?
A
minimum of
10
feet from abutting side or rear lot lines, or a minimum of 10 feet from side or rear lot lines of abutting lots.
Yeah. If that's good English, and that solves
imagine
that...
Imagine you're going to wordsmith that a little bit. I think you captured the idea. Is there, I'm going to go back to the first additional recommended change, the 50 to 75%. I think I asked this, is there a maximum or minimum, or I'm thinking certainly of the maximum size that says, look, if you're this big, 75% still out of proportion? Is there... Do you think it's just controlled by the overall lot size?
Well, the lot size is going to be the principal driver, but then I don't know. There's again a zillion ways to skin a cat.
Yeah. So what's the overall lot coverage allowance?
Yeah, it's 65%.
65%.
It's going to be a tight dance.
That's structures.
Throwing some impervious driveway in that whole thing. That's why I say 3/4 is like, you're right on the mark. Anything smaller than that, it's not happening. Really. Okay.
I'm not feeling like there's something here that's just telling me, wow, this is just wrong. I mean, overall, it feels right. It feels like staff has thought it through. As I said earlier, my only hesitation is knowing how long we spent on landing on the acre and trying to recreate all the memory of why we landed on the acre.
At the time, we were also considering...
Blood was dripping out of our ears.
We had the same conversation at that point.
Yeah.
Is acre the right threshold?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And I remember the 25 feet, and we just, like, I think we talked about it for at least 45 minutes.
More than one session. And so
that's the first level of gentleman's farm, 3/4 acre.
Yeah.
Yeah. That always troubles me, unless that's inside a plat of common 3/4 acre lots. Economics says that should be subdivided. Mm-hmm. At about the same time, anybody's going to be talking about accessory buildings.
But if somebody's subdividing, generally an accessory building's not going to be a detriment. The value and...
It won't come up. If they subdivide that lot, they'd never be talking to you about an accessory building.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They'd be subdividing and having two houses with a garage that's attached, probably the same square footage as that combination.
Which is the other thing I thought about here is when this, it was like, okay, so it does encourage someone to go the subdivide route more quickly in my head. Because then it's like, okay, I can subdivide, take this money and go buy my 5-acre lot and put 4 accessory buildings on it, and no one's going to bother me.
You're going to play Monopoly.
Exactly.
So that, to me, that's what I keep, my flags go up about this whole conversation. I don't remember if we did this the last time around, but I get all the semantics of measurements and setbacks and protect your neighbors, but part of me always wondered, are we kind of, by allowing it to happen at all, are we kind of pulling the reins back on prospective development?
I wouldn't think so, because the value in development is going to be so much greater than the incidental.
Until 2 or 3 folks in the course of a 10-year span of time mixed in the street
do this
so that nobody wants to live there, relative to subdividing and making 2 houses next to this guy's 35-foot barn. So, catch 22, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's
a good point.
That concept would, in effect, halt or at least stymie greatly.
So, and you're getting to the notion of infill and encouraging infill, right? And to a degree, it's slightly different than infill.
Yeah, we're starting to see
the same notion, right? And similar to that, I mean, the main thing that's kind of running through my head is this: does this in any way encourage or impede accessory dwelling units and true living, an ADU versus a barn?
The only thing that this is doing is expand, other than the 10-foot issue, which we've clarified, this is lessening the restriction. Right now, it's much more restrictive than what we're proposing.
Say that another way, please.
So right now, the limitations are greater than what we're proposing in here. We're not adding any layers of regulation. We're lessening layers of regulation. So it becomes easier to do an accessory structure in relation to an accessory dwelling unit.
So this goes back to my point again.
Awesome.
Rob, can you hold off on your drawing for a second?
Here. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't want to create a job for us necessarily, but it occurs to me that maybe we need to be looking at this slightly differently. If we were to go across the city and look at every lot where this might come up and just ask the question, if we across the board allowed some zoning modification that allowed those parcels or those groups of parcels to be subdivided, maybe that's our flag to say, pay attention, and this accessory dwelling, accessory building is the place to start saying we should do that. Because I really do, I believe what I said. I think if you allow that to happen over the next 10 years,
you're saying you're going to preclude it if in a string of half acre or three quarter acre lots,
yeah.
If 1, 3, and 5 develop this way, 2 and 4 are not going to look at subdividing.
They're not going to want to be next to that because they're not going to jive with it.
It goes both ways, though.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, not everybody wants to sub. They want that large lot with the accessory because that's what they want to live in. They don't want to look at the turn money
well,
on that lot.
We're not going to preclude that. But
you're just saying give them the choice.
I'm saying maybe the reason they're doing this is because it's their best option with what they have. Maybe they wouldn't. And I can think of a place on Park Street right now where there's a 1920s vacant lot that has a 7,000 or 8,000 square foot pole barn in the very back of it. They left it there so they could build in front of it, but they hadn't gotten around to that. 1920s house, all of a sudden we've got relatively new 2.5-story condo with enough room in the back of it to throw up another one. It's just a hodgepodge mess because people did the best they could with what they could do at the time. This conversation around accessory buildings is telling me we ought to be looking at that in a separate way, and along with allowing this to happen. So,
they're intended to be equal height. So my question was going to be, existing house that's already at or above that height limitation, why would we then want to say, no, you can't be at the normal 5-foot setback or restrict this height otherwise?
It's an open question. I think from a perspective of aesthetics, accessory buildings tend not to look as nice as homes. They have fewer windows, they have cheaper materials, so you're going to see the wall a lot more than what you'd see in it.
Yeah. And I guess more keeps running in my head is the idea of the mother-in-law over the garage thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that to me, I think, is one of the most common. I don't know. There are certainly a heck of a lot of them around here, but there's, you know, if you're 3/4 of an acre, are you really keeping livestock, or are you keeping your horse on that small? So it's truly a pole barn, or is it more of the nice garage because you're a
car
enthusiast, right? And you're working on, you know, I mean, so there's so many possibilities. I don't want to include any of that with this.
So I'll go so far with my point just to ask a question or request from staff. On our next agenda, would you come and speak to us about what you think would happen in the area where this conversation is available, those 3/4-acre lots, if we were to come up with an overlay of higher density?
An overlay of higher density.
So right now there's a 3/4 lot, and that's its max density, right? Single family.
No, the density is 1 unit or 4 units per acre for the zoning.
So
what's keeping them from subdividing? Just
nothing. They can subdivide if they want to, as long as they're within the city limits and have access to the sewer.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's not the case out here.
Yeah, ULID needs to form in some of those areas before they'd be able to subdivide.
Well, that takes some of my thunder away. That's okay. I wouldn't want us to suggest people do something by our permit process or by our regs that maybe they wouldn't do otherwise. But if you're saying the zoning allows it, then it's a matter of coming up with a plan to create the sewer connection.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
So I'm still struggling with D. I'm sorry.
So
the detached accessory on a lot that's 3/4 of an acre or larger.
Mm-hmm.
So what if it's two?
If it's two.
2 acres.
2 acres. Then yeah, that applies. So right now, if it's 1 acre or larger, you're not limited.
It just
now we're making
make
it
sense. I'm like, why are we, I mean, the whole point, I feel like the whole point of our discussion is for the people who are on
just shy of an acre.
Right, they're being restricted because they're not an acre or more, but then we're adding a restriction for the people who have the lots that are bigger than an acre, or bigger than 3/4 of an acre.
Yeah, and
right?
Just that provision about the 10 feet is because you're likely to get larger buildings, and those larger buildings have scale issues, so 10-foot setback.
So what you're saying is you're seeing it as the trade-off of
we're reducing the limitations.
Reducing the lot size, but in consideration of that, increasing other restrictions.
Mm-hmm. We just increased a restriction for someone who's...
We still haven't increased...
It's not applicable to the problem that we're trying to solve.
All right.
See what I'm saying? I mean, am I
Well, just imagine, though, if you're that situation where you're living pretty close to the property line and your neighbor builds a huge barn immediately next to your house. So all the windows of your house you're looking out, you used to see their pasture, now you're looking at barn. And five more feet isn't going to make much difference there, but it makes difference for light and... There's
so I get that, but I'm still struggling with, so now you just limited somebody who has this big piece of property from doing something
I'm trying to picture my own barn and write, what would happen to that on my 4.5 acres.
Right, so you would have to put your barn 10 feet off where today is only has to be 5, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think, and
possibly limit its height.
Right. Just because you're next to someone who has a 3/4 acre lot, so you're being
not next punished. To you, but because you have a three, or because you're doing something larger than what you otherwise would.
Yeah, I just ripped D, just really.
You can still do it 5 feet if you're size limited.
So, to Piper's question, if this is looking to accommodate those slightly smaller lot sizes and protect neighbors because they are somewhat smaller, should we maybe not be looking at then creating this middle ground? It's not the small lot under the 3/4 under, but why place those same limitations
And that, I guess,
2 acres, 5 acres.
My answer to that is just to keep it simple. Our code can turn into a 16,000-page document if we try to deal with every situation. Mm-hmm. And so there's always going to be something that doesn't fit for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. And that's what the process is for, the application. The applicant says, I want to do this. There's a modification request.
Mm-hmm. But that
case by case.
That 10-foot... setback addition is, it's up for debate whether or not that's necessary.
I personally don't think it's necessary. I think we just added something to something that, you already say that it has to be 20 feet back, and now, how many people are going to now come in and say, okay, I was going to build my barn back here 5 feet on the back corner, and now I can't because I have to move it in 10 feet. I realize they have more property.
You
can probably do that, but
it is 5 already.
That's 5 already. Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking of my own very own example. I'm thinking it probably would fail on two tests. One is it wouldn't meet the back because it's actually in front, which I never understood why they built it that way, but that's what they did. And the 75%, because it's a pretty good sized barn. So,
but do you have more than 3/4 of an acre?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so you would be able to do it under this thing.
No. Your size is fine because size and height doesn't apply. It's just that you have to have it 10 feet off the side and rear lot lines. The size doesn't apply. You can make it 4 times the size of your house. If you read the table, it explains it better. I just don't like putting it. The problem that we're trying to solve is the 3/4 acre thing, and I don't see how this adding the 10 feet is even remotely.
The tie-in is that when you're going down to 3/4 acre, you're getting into a denser situation where you're more likely to have neighbors that are close to the property line. And so then you need to think about that scale issue again. Is an unlimited size building appropriate 5 feet from the property line?
And we didn't have it before.
So when we think of other large scale uses like a warehouse, a commercial office, they do typically have a much larger setback when adjacent to a residential property.
I guess I'm on the other side of it just because I don't know that 10 feet's the right number, but I think a setback of when you're going to allow a much bigger building, or then it seems like there should be a bigger setback. And plus, you have more land to deal with anyway. So, you know, why do you got to be right on the line if you're, you know, if you have a house that's right there? What's the point, you know?
But if I'm a house, protecting
your neighbor.
If you have a small
accessory building,
then you're not.
Then you can be 5 feet.
This just says they can be larger if setback a minimum of 20 feet. Or 20 feet behind the house and 10 feet from rear side.
That's only for the larger ones.
Larger is defined by percentage of primary structure?
Larger than the height and size limitations.
So if it's shorter than my existing home, shorter than the primary residence, and not as big of a footprint, then I can do 5 feet.
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not how I read that at all.
Okay, so just imagine your lot.
Larger than height, okay.
Your lot is, say, an acre.
Yeah.
You can still do your mm-hmm. house 5 feet away as long as it's no more than 75% of the size of the floor area of the principal structure.
Okay.
And no more than 25 feet in height.
Okay.
If you want to exceed those, then you have to set it more.
Then you have to put it
10 feet.
Okay.
Yeah.
25 foot flat roof. No pitch. You can all you want.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
And I've just wanted to just check what I'm reading. So throughout this, there's a kind of a mix of ADU and accessory building.
Mm-hmm.
Very different function.
Yeah.
Different hookups to the sewer or whatever the sewer system is. And so I assume you've studied that and it's clearly spelled out here. Just
ADUs have their own section. This is just the accessory residential, and then below this is in our code accessory dwelling units, and that has additional priority.
So on D, you chose the word uses as opposed to buildings,
right,
to keep it covering everything.
Hmm.
Okay.
Do you recall the use section?
What's that?
Do you remember what section
A? It's immediately following this.
Okay, great.
Okay. Oh, there's a public hearing.
Yep.
No, right, not tonight.
So we don't have to make a decision tonight. We can go to
I got all my questions out, and that's my default. Is, you know, I'm feeling a lot better about it. We'll go through the public hearing.
And then we can jibber jabber more.
And we'll solidify the thoughts.
Yes.
So a couple of anything else about this? Or are we everyone comfortable?
I have enough information to toil over.
Okay, I've got one item before German.
I want to clarify, though, are we making the suggested amendment here of 10 feet from side or rear lot of abutting lots, or is it okay as it stands?
Let's go for 7. How about 7.5?
Okay.
It's fine. You can leave it. My pain was because I thought that, we had some clarifications.
Well, I was just going to say best to Gary getting healthy again. Being sick with the flu is no fun. I don't know if you guys got that message.
But yes.
Down with the flu.
And did you guys see the message from Brendan? Why he's out?
No.
He broke his Achilles
tendon. Oh,
yes.
That's a painful long.
Hurts. Poor guy.
Yeah. It hurts just to think about that.
Well, what about what was he doing when he did?
I don't know. He didn't say.
Although I'll say, George Cook did that one time when he was back skiing within several months, which was phenomenal.
That's some good planning, Commissioner. I tore my ACL when I was in California.
Yeah,
right. It's like we've all gone through our.
Apparently, that's what happens if you're a planning commissioner.
Stay healthy.
Yeah, you're planning commissioner. You gotta have some surgery.
And then you also. I was pleasantly surprised to see the
energy and sustainability element. The council.
Yeah. Oh, yes, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So we could even get there and hear the discussion that was done.
Yeah.
I was a little bit perturbed at that, but then I was like,
I appreciate
then
you coming.
To say, like,
yeah, thanks for going and thanks for reporting back.
Yes.
Well, and thanks for putting together all the stuff in the front here on the everything that's been going on and.
I'm going to take this
since
out, and I'm going to keep calendar
of events.
Yeah. How much has it gone up since this report?
Yes, actually, since we Just since we put out this report, we got another application for a 40-lot subdivision, and we've just had the pre-application for Sigali. Sigali's the biggest development in North Bend.
And where is Sigali?
It is
right here.
It's where is
it? Oh, that one. Yeah. Okay.
Say that again. It's a river frontage, right?
No.
No.
They have a little slice of river frontage.
Is it like right kind of?
Oh, right here is the river. Is it really?
Yeah.
So it's behind Tannerwood.
No.
Right.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah, Tannerwood's here. Tannerwood will connect into it.
Yeah.
So they came in with a proposal for 163 lots.
Tell me who's Sigali acres.
Sigali is just the property owner. They own a lot of property in this area. Or,
he owns a ton
big size
in the. Does he own a lot of commercial, like in the down
in Auburn?
Auburn.
Yeah.
That by the super mall and. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somebody just bought the property above Forest Woods too.
What's that? Which one? The.
Zinc or Zemp?
Right here.
Zemp stuff?
One big lot sold just recently. There's three left.
And you mentioned another plat application for 40 lots, or is that?
That is the Walker property. So Jim is going to Walker, they have a theater.
Yep.
This is theirs right here. So this will be Harbor Homes.
Well, that's actually, it's two different owners here. One is the Walkers and the
other
owner.
Yeah,
right.
Low density.
So you got per acre. So those are 2 5-acre parcels, though, right? So it's 10 acres?
Yeah, I don't know the size, but roughly 40 some units. And Byron Moore subdivision, that's coming back in.
Oh, it is.
Reply for that.
Anything cottage housing?
I know, where's our cottages?
What do we need to do to fix that?
We're going to have traffic issues, I'm telling you.
Heartland has got a proposal in the works for their property. We haven't seen it come in yet.
Which, that's cottage, right? Yeah.
That's the piece between Cedar Falls and North Broadway, right?
Yeah.
And Heartland's also the one on the other side of I-90, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they've got an application.
Two different concepts, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, from 466... another 40, and then 156 is the Sigali.
163, but that's their pre-application number. They're not going to be able to achieve that in reality.
Is that 5?
So if you multiply that all times 2.5, that's a heck of a lot of new residents into our
community. It is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, traffic issues. We're going to start working on that traffic plan.
Well, you all did that.
I'm going to modify it.
Who wants to reopen that door?
I'll
just say it's going to get reopened.
Yeah.
So, motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor? We are adjourned.